I came from the lowest division rugby that you can play. And I mean, no one will be going to watch those games because who are you expecting to find in development rugby? No one. My first season with Portlaoise in Development League. So I went to Leinster Trials, didn't get picked, didn't even get a call back. I knew I was good enough deep down. So I took the long road.
They are kicking themselves.
Yeah, I took the long road to Connacht. I played one match for Connacht and I got selected by the Irish coach to go into camp. And that's that. And I started the first game of Six Nations and played them all that year in 2010.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House of Rugby URC, another cracking weekend of URC action to look back on, including a huge interprovincial encounter between Munster and Leinster in Thomond Park. As always, I am joined by the lovely, the legendary Lindsay Pete.
Thank you very much. I missed you, my friend, my bearded, my beautiful bearded little friend. How are you?
I was sick last week, unfortunately. The Mr. 19 finally caught me, so I was down for a few days, but thankfully back now. Still a bit of a sore chest, but negative tests and back in work with this my good friend, the Olympic hero himself. Thank you very much for keeping the seat warm.
It's good to have you back, Captain.
Yeah. You'd have me out of a job soon, I'd say. But
not at all. No, we have another great guest joining us today, guys. An old friend of yours. Yes. Irish Rugby International, former Irish Rugby International, Alison Miller. Great to have you on.
Good to be here with you guys.
We'll get straight into it anyway. Obviously, we'll kick off with the main event. Obviously, I don't want to talk too much about it. I don't think Greg does, but I'm sure Lindsay does. Munster, Leinster, Thomond Park. A bonus point win for Leinster in Limerick. 34-19, the final score was. Yeah. Disappointing from a Munster perspective anyway, I can say that much.
Well, I think things need to change because four times out of the last five trips we've gone down and beaten you. So considering Munster and their history and Thomond Park being such a fortress, you know, it's never easy going down there. But I thought Leinster were patient and I thought, to be honest, when they're in the 22, we just went to another gear and that just highlighted the gap, I think. I think we're in good stead now for the season without really digging the knife into you two. Beautiful.
Yeah. I'm always giving out about them. You've tried to defend them. Like, I don't think you can defend them this time, can you?
No, because I actually went to the match yesterday and I saw it in person. I was so frustrated. It's my voice. I was just shouting. I was the loudest man in the stand shouting. I thought the decision making was just so poor yesterday. But it's still a fortress. Like 10 home games in a row, Munster won all competitions. It's just we can't beat Leinster, man.
I think it's the gap to the next level to go back to bring us back to Trophy City, you know. That's where you have been kind of.
It's three defeats in the last four games. Though, like, you remember that as well. Like, there was two defeats in South Africa as well, and then there was a rout against the Dragons. What do you make of the game, Alison?
I just think there is a big gulf between Munster and Leinster now. Unfortunately, for you guys to have to hear that, but Leinster rugby, just the depth that they have in their squad to be able to bring in those guys, the strength of their back row. The speed of Leinster's ruck ball, it's so quick. It's so hard to defend. And I just think, you know, like the simple hands, they just do it so well. They do the simple things really well. And I think they're probably one of the best teams in, you know, club rugby in the world. And they're so hard to beat. But like you have someone like Jimmy O'Brien playing absolutely out of his skin at the moment. Like to finish his try to beat Murray, sensational. You've got James Lowe who's just... He's got so many strings to his bow. He's like an extra back rower out there. He's got his fend. He's got his footwork. He's got his handoff. He's so good to watch.
He's improved his game, hasn't he, from his decision making? And I like the way they really held the width. Gibson Park just again sucked Munster in around the try line. They were patient. They stuck to their game plan. And similar to the Ringrose try, they just went blind. They seen Munster hadn't got the numbers. And just it was really simple hands, really simple, basic rugby, being patient. And I just thought...
Executed very well.
Yes. Yeah. And rugby is a simple game. Just before we come on here, it's simple. It's keeping the ball, making good decisions, retaining it, biding your time and sticking to your game plan. You know what I mean? Mm. And I think Leinster did that very well. And in championship games, when you're put under pressure, this is the difference, I think, for me. Being a Leinster fan, I know I'm biased, but I think this is the difference. And this is the difference with championship winning teams across all sports. Execution, possession.
I think Munster have to decide going forward, obviously, what way they're going to play, how their attack is going to evolve. We heard a lot about how their attack was going to evolve over the last number of years, but I don't think we've really seen that. So I think they stayed in the fight, I think, probably longer than they have in previous games. And they did show intent and their bench came on and made a huge difference. And I think it's a question
about... A bench of Irishmen. Like, yous have big names. If you look at Leinster, to be fair to them, you can say about their depth, but what they're doing is they're blooding Irish players, which will only help Irish rugby and has brought success to a blue and a green jersey. Unfortunately, some of Munster's big names aren't Irishmen, though they develop those around them. Like Kendallin Kamani, he was such an impact player. I thought he was brilliant. He's the ex-Irish under-20s captain. He really impressed me when he led out that team last year. And I think maybe, obviously, the coach has to be sorted. But I think for me, what Munster need to do now is probably just blood your younger players, because I think the ethos and mentality and heart of Munster rugby would be reinvigorated by some of the youth that would come through.
That's what you've been pretty strong about, like, you know, over the last few weeks. Like, and you look at it, said you have Kendallin coming on there, Witcherly, Casey, Ben Healy, then you've got guys like Crowley there as well, Buckley. Like, the next coach comes in, would you like him to say, okay, let's look at this as a 2 or 3 year project and let's build around this young academy of players you've got coming through?
Yeah, exactly. I think some of the best players are sitting there in around the 20, 21 years old. So it's going to be, I think, of at least another 2-3 seasons before we get Munster back to, say, cup-winning rugby. But if you look at the teams yesterday, it was basically Munster versus the Irish team. And people were like, oh, internationals are back. Munster had Conor Murray, Peter O'Mahony and Joey back, who were all on the bench for Ireland. And you name out Leinster, Gary, Robbie, Lowe, you could just name them all. Like Doris,
Conan. Sure, 80%
of the team. The front row, come on, was Ealy.
Yeah. It's just a whole Irish team.
And Ty Furlong.
Yeah, can you imagine that, like...
Do you know what I mean?
But we bided our time. Do you know what I mean? I think at this stage, and look, I'm not Munster, but I'm just kind of looking at a blueprint that works.
Leinster had a long-term plan, as when I look at what we're saying, as in Munster always seems to be short-term. This seems to be, okay, let's bring in our Snyman, let's bring in our Derlendes, let's bring in our Larkhams, let's bring in our Roundtrees. And every year, now it's, let's bring in Fekitoa. Like, instead of going, okay, let's not look at the long-term plan again. Okay, let's build a squad over 2, 3, 4 years and not let's spend all our money and get these big investment companies to come in.
Yeah.
And let's build that squad for years.
Yeah, and it is swings and roundabouts. I mean, in the successful Munster years, we've seen an Irish team being the nucleus, being those Paul O'Connells and the Dunicas and the Peter Stringers and the Derry Fanneries. And, you know, like, I want to see that back. You don't want boring games. You want, like, you do want success. And you want, it's been a long time now. And I just think, I think you're right. I think, build it around Fekitoa, you know, but the essence of Munster rugby has to be the homegrown talent from the provinces of Munster.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'm not a big fan of Fekitoa coming over, but I think, as you mentioned, Kendallin was unbelievable, Coombs is unbelievable, but our best player yesterday was Damien Delande. Like, you know, when the marquee player's leaving as well, Claudia was good, he's leaving, so we need to start looking at our own fellas and building it up around them guys. Get Kendallin, start playing him more. He was the best player in the pitch.
You've got John Hodness on a person there who's a super player. Like, who just does, he's not getting minutes at all because Clota is there. So if he goes, maybe John Hodness will get a full season under his belt and he'll start developing into a Caelan Dyers or into a Jack Conan or into and Josh van der Fleer, because it takes time.
It takes time. And Dyers wasn't too long again, under 20s, biding his time at Leinster, and now he's getting...
Like, I think it's the competition in Leinster, though. It just... You know, like, you get your chance in Leinster to perform and you get your chance to start, you have to keep it. So you have to play well. So all this competition that they have, you know, like, you see guys now that are leaving to go to Connacht, the three guys, you know, it's, there's so much competition that if you get your opportunity in Leinster, you got to take it. So if that builds that ethos of, you know, high standards. So do Munster have that same... competition in their team week in, week out?
I think they do, but they don't rotate as well as Lancaster and Cullen. I think there's something different there. We kind of said this a couple of weeks ago that it's a bit like, you know,
they don't have the biggest squad as well as the leader, do they? Like,
no,
but it's up to the coaches to build that environment. That's your coach's problem, to build that environment.
In fairness, yes, it was Leinster's starting 15 and we were missing Ty Byrne, Zeebo, Earls, Conway. Put all those guys in, that's a lot of leadership. It might have tightened it up a little bit more and made a bit of a tighter game. But then again, if you're going to be winning cups as a Munster rugby, your second string lads should be able to not play as poorly as they did yesterday. So yeah, it was quite demoralising, but Leinster were good, man. And the only kind of another positive for me was the bench, Munster's bench. I was really impressed with Craig Casey when he came on.
Yeah.
When the pace went up when he came on like crazy. I thought he was really impressed. I thought Ben Healy was good at 10. But I'm kind of clutching at straws. I just thought the decision making was poor. When Peter Manning kicked the ball going down the wing, I was just like, what is he doing? He's an incredible player, but line outs, ruck, and tackle it. That's it. Stop kicking the ball, man. Yeah. It's such a poor leadership decision. You're the leader on
the
pitch.
He's not the fastest.
And you're kicking the ball, man. There's kids looking at you like.
But if a player that senior is making those decisions, you've got to look upstairs and go, like, if Peter Manny, if there isn't a game plan that Peter Manny's doing kicks like that, then.
Is that desperation?
That's what I'm saying. He must be. Is he fed up? Yeah.
He tried it twice. He had an advantage a couple of minutes before that and he kicked it. Lucky it came back and we got the kick. Then he did it again. I was like, what does that say to the younger lads? Like, we're just going to kick the ball around. We're playing Leinster in the derby. We're losing. Let's just kick the ball. Yeah. Like, it was just really frustrating because he'd never have done that before. Like,
no.
You know, and there was another decision when we got a penalty in our half in the 10 metre playing up the way in the first half, I think it was, and he decided to go for a scrum in our own 10 metre. That's such a weird decision to make. You're 50 metres away or 60 metres away, kick the ball to touch, get the line out and play in your half.
Like,
decision making for me was just so weird yesterday, I thought. So it was quite frustrating, but I don't see how they're going to get on against Exeter now.
That's a big block coming in. Like, I mean, going to Exeter and Sandy Park, so it works. It's going to be aggregate this time around, so even if we do get a win in Tone Park, which you'd be confident they still might be able to hold them, I don't think they'd be able to hold him over two legs, to be honest with you.
No, not the calibre of the players Exeter have and their experience, and obviously finalists last year. Am I right with that? So, I don't know. I just think now, I don't think Munster have a set team. You know my opinion on Casey Murray argument. I think to play the style of rugby now that's kind of throughout the world, it's quick, it's explosive, and I'm not sure Munster have the identity fully now to just go confidently. But I'm hopeful. I'm obviously a Munster fan for that game. Just to put your mind, please.
If we get if Conway plays, Ersey plays, I think we might do all right in our home fixture against Exeter. They'll trouble the leadership a bit more.
You say we're going to lose Coombs for that game. I know we're just saying it would be great. It could be a huge opportunity for Ken Dillon.
I'd back
losing
him
Coombs is still a massive blow, and losing him in the circumstances in which we lost him. I know we had Devin on the show there a few weeks back, but what happened there? It was he came in that this whole side injury business. It's an accident waiting to happen. We've seen so many serious injuries. I don't understand how that wasn't picked up.
Yep.
Somehow it resulted in a Leinster penalty, and I'm sick and tired of seeing it because so many players are getting serious injuries over this just recklessness.
And considering the referee was so hot actually on the breakdown yesterday, it was kind of strange, wasn't it? Because he was like, there was penalty after penalty and penalty for both sides all at the breakdown. So it's frustrating. And again, they're kind of, I know referees are giving messages. We've seen it in the women's game, which we'll move on to in a while. But the breakdown is a hot point now, and they're trying to speed up, obviously, the game. But you have to take player welfare into consideration. Yeah.
Leinster yesterday seemed to come out with the mindset of rocking past the ball. They were going like a metre past every time.
Which again, on the cusp of being
which
penis.
Is on the cusp, which is kind of like, it was a bit weird, but it worked for them yesterday. Munster couldn't live with the ruck speed from Leinster.
See, the thing is, again, like, you know, as players, you just... My job, my philosophy in it is, and Ali will know this because I would have said it a lot of time when they were giving out to me for giving away penalties, my job is not to referee, my job is to play.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're going to, you know, if you're living on the edge and you're getting away with
well, if you're managing the referee, and I think smart teams will figure that out within 5 minutes of the game, how the ref is reffing key parts of the game, like the offside, like the ruck. And I suppose Leinster were smart. They figured out early on they could do that and they got away with it. And if the referee is not going to ping you on that, well, you're going to do it. So...
we'll be seeing it with England, Ireland, scrum.
But isn't that brings us back? Like, that is the problem with rugby. I mean, you're always going to be given an opportunity to get in the referee's ear in any sport. That's only natural. But in rugby, it comes down so much to a referee's interpretation in so many of the key areas.
Yes.
And especially when it results in something like this, like, I mean, if it's something like a scrum, like, with England and Ireland game, like, and they're getting away with penalties, something like this where, like, a guy's career could be on the line.
Absolutely.
Something serious could happen because of guys who know they're getting away with these things. And if they're penalised, they won't do it anymore. And we've seen that with high tackles. I know they're still there, but the game has gotten much better because players know now you have to get lower. And as a result of that, like, it's going to benefit, like, careers because people aren't like, won't have to retire at 29, 30 because of concussions anymore. So it's a huge area.
That's up to the clubs now to kind of highlight it to the hierarchy, you know, to keep an eye on. Let's look at this change, and, you know, but
another talking point for me yesterday was I thought Joey did very well at 15 when he went back there. And I know the other week I was saying weird that Joey played 15 for Ireland for those 10 minutes. I like the look of him back there because he's so creative, he's such a good step, he sees gaps. And then when Ben Healy went in at 10, I thought that was a nice way to have it. I'm going to say Matt Gallagher didn't have a good game. And he just compared to Keenan, like, the high balls, he wasn't dominating the air. Yeah. Some poor decisions running back in. So I'd like, in the next couple of games against Exeter, I think I'd like to see Joey at 15. What do you make of that, Jason?
It's a strange one because it brings us all the way back, because Joey came in at 15 for Leinster, before he signed for Munster, and he played a lot of games there because Johnny was at 10 and he was absolutely class there. But then he was like, yeah, but it doesn't matter how class he is there. We need a backup 10 for Ireland. Yeah. So let's move him to Munster. So he plays a 10 at Munster. And if we go back to this now, he ends up playing 15. Yeah. After all the talk, and the reason he moved to Munster was to be a 10 and to challenge Johnny Sexton.
I think he's been riddled with injury. Yeah. And I think he hasn't hit the form that we saw earlier on when he played 10. So I thought, yeah, Healy did really well as well. And Carberry was really good at 15. But do we need to give him a little bit more time to try and regain that form that he had? So potentially that, like Johnny, obviously for Ireland, I'm sick of that conversation, but he's not going to be around forever. So do we need to give him a bit of time to try and rediscover his form at 10?
I think you're right, because we had Ross Byrne yesterday is another name. Obviously, I thought Ben Healy had a great game when he came in at 10. I think he's having a great season. He's been key to any of the Munster good performances, and we all know how key our 10 is. Mm. But I think Ross Byrne is another one. He's just solid. He's nothing fancy. So he consistent. Plays the game. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nice option. And I think, going back to the extra game, whatever about your players, your coach has to pick now at this stage a team that's just, you know, just go, just set your stall out. You know, it's championship rugby now at this stage. You know, just play with some, just gamble. Just gamble and trust in your squad. And you know what? If you have
Stop
to play,
kicking it away.
I just love the way Leinster played so flat to the line. I think that was a huge difference.
Some of the passes on the gain line yesterday were sublime. And as a forward, when you're like being sold down the Swanee, but if you're given this ball on the gain line, you know, obviously that's what you want. You just want through a gap because it's a split decision for the defender and you're getting a soft shoulder. You've got so much momentum. No one's stopping you. And it's just a joy. And I know the Italy game, Johnny only came on as a sub, but he was just a general and everything was on the gain line.
It comes down to your speed of rock ball as well, which Leinster are very good at, like Ireland. Whereas Munster aren't great at that at the moment. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like the ball isn't, they're not getting it out as quick enough.
No.
There are areas
you can improve on. But again, you just have to pick your philosophy and go with it. Like Leinster have not deviated. They stick to the plan. Even against Connacht when they were frustrating in the first half, they stuck to it. They were patient. They didn't give away the ball. They didn't give away penalties. And eventually they grind.
I think this is a big thing. I think Munster are at a crossroads about how they're going to play. What's their style?
I don't think they've any
for
identity.
A long time, you know, like the box kicking, maul. And that is a huge strength of Munster. But I think you have to have variety to your game. So you keep those things because they're traditional strengths, but you bring other aspects to your game. It's like any good team. They're able to play their different strengths around the field, but I think Munster have to evolve their game to keep those two things, but also, you know, play a different style at different times of the game, because I think they got to adapt and they have to go with it. And I think we haven't seen the evolution.
Well, they have to be adaptable to the opposition they play.
They don't have the players to do that, play to execute that game anymore either. Like, I mean, you look at the back then when you had a Ron O'Gara kicking to touch, right? I know Ben Healy can kick touch as well, but you had a Ron O'Gara kicking to touch, and you had Gerry Fannery throwing darts in, like, and never missing his man. You had like someone like the Bull lifting up O'Connell or O'Callaghan. You had a huge tight five there.
Yeah.
Like, we have a small tight five at the moment. Like,
I mean,
look in the second row, the biggest person in the tight five is Klein.
Yeah.
Ty Burns a small second row.
Yeah.
Our front row, Dave Klein isn't a big front row. You've got Archer and
John Ryan
coming there, not big tight ends and not international quality tight ends. And you'd like, Scanlon is struggling for form and has struggled to form for a number of seasons. So you can't exclude that game plan anymore. It just doesn't work. The players aren't there for it.
No, and if you look at, right, Keane Healy isn't kind of, you know, he doesn't dominate the loose or make gains like Tyke Furlong was. But then you've Dan Sheen again, who's like they utilise him off the back of a mall. Like, he's not going into a mall now, he's trying to take it on, he's winning gain line. So you've now the more modern prop is probably nearly like a back row in a club situation. They're mobile, they're powerful, they're ball players. Now you have a totally different animal that you're playing against, you know. So look, I think I've dug the knife in enough.
Yeah, I think we'll move on to the
right,
Six Nations.
We will. So before we move on to some more URC games, we're going to look at the women's rugby, who played in the Ernest Vallon Stadium in Toulouse yesterday and unfortunately come up against a very strong French team, coming on the wrong side of a 40-5 defeat. Miller.
Yeah.
Hit us with it.
Disappointing game, I think, for many reasons, I suppose. We were hoping to see an improvement from the Wales game. I think we had a lot of handling errors. We just had an inability to exit. We're trying to play in the wrong areas of the field. And I think, I know they're talked about playing a high tempo game and moving the ball, but there's a time and place for that. There was a few different scenarios where we tried to pass it along, run it from deep. France had a full D We saw like a knock-ons, putting himself under pressure.
A lot of unforced errors.
Unforced errors as well. So you got to ask, well, is there a lack of confidence? Sometimes there's a lack of confidence or nerves. But I think just, as I said, the handling, we gave away a lot of penalties. Our discipline, I think we're definitely missing a Claire Malloy, a Kira Griffin type player out there that can turn over the ball. Mm. Like our back row, I think, probably doesn't have the balance that we need to have yet. We've got, you know, Adele McMahon, who's a really big tackler. You've got Dorothy Wall, who's a big carrier.
We've no ball players, really, do we?
But we're just kind of, I think the balance is missing. I think we're quite a small team. Even our backs, compared to the French backs, we look small.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the try that we created was lovely, lovely pass to play. Went down, you know, the left side, went across.
Yeah.
And Eve Higgins scored a lovely try. So nice passages of play, but we, because we're small, we're going to have to figure out a way to play to come up against these big French packs. Like our, you know, our set piece, our scrum was under huge pressure. Our line out.
I kind of said that before the game, like our area of concern was kind of the scrum, yeah. Right? Our line out was kind of a shining light. We got some really good ball. Sam Monaghan was top line out winner, like at the overall games last weekend with 8. So it was really good ball. So I thought, you know, if we can kick a bit more to territory, to touch, you know, that's the game we want to play. Because, you know, you might know this, Ali went and decided to go with 7. It's the only time we beat the French most recently in 2017. We won 13-10.
I bet the French before, though, in 2013.
Yeah, we used her as motivation. But that day, I remember, the key thing was we frustrated France. Yeah. We kept the ball. Our line-out was exceptional. Our scrum was exceptional. And it was a just great day for Irish rugby. You weren't there, sorry, to celebrate it. But
sitting on the plane in delayed plane in Dublin Airport watching the game. I could have played. Could have got on the plate.
Listen,
we didn't actually
made
leave
your
to
bed,
the next
you
day.
Lying at woman. But anyway, the thing about rugby, we said it's a simple game. It was actually 50-50 possession. If I'm
I didn't
wrong
realize
yesterday.
That afterwards.
But 15 handling errors in the first half. Like, I mean, 15, in the first half,
it was dry as well.
You know, no matter how well you play there, like when you make those little mistakes like that, like, I mean, you're like, that should be the easy part. You're doing the hard work, and then you're knocking the ball on, like, and you're actually set up well as a team, like, you know, yeah. And you're doing everything else right.
And I'm wondering, because they played against 11,000 plus. You played the last time we played in Ireland.
I played a lot of times away in
that
France.
That was 2018, yeah. I think. And it's a beautiful, France is a great place to go. We played in Perpignan as well, and which is nearly like an amphitheatre. Everyone was looking down on you. But it's a beautiful energy and buzz, and they're very respectful of rugby itself. You know, now it's a cauldron of, I would think, pressure as well if you're not used to it.
I actually think the complete opposite, because when we used to go away to France, you'd only have a very handful of Irish supporters. But the fact that you can play in a packed stadium,
oh, I loved it.
Playing women's rugby, and let's call a spade, that doesn't often happen.
No.
You have to thrive off that absolute buzz of the crowd
energy,
and the French and the energy. I just think, yeah, maybe that's an issue because a lot of these girls have played 2 years of COVID rugby where there's no fans, there's no supporters. There is no, like, the difference in playing in a packed stadium when you're trying to pass out calls or you're trying to communicate.
Are you saying that the crowd threw the girls off? Is that what
you're
saying?
No, I don't know.
We're just kind of, I suppose, trying to figure out.
So
that's what I'm saying.
No, not at all.
Like, what I'm saying is you actually should thrive on that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as in, as I'm saying, when we went to play against France all those years, even though it was only a handful of Irish supporters, I loved playing 20,000 French and the music.
It's probably your personality, though.
You were making a good point there as well.
Like, I absolutely, like, yes, we've got a massive. You're probably the same. Like, the more people, the better. Like, the higher the pressure, the better.
I felt like Conor McGregor coming into a UFC match. I was like, bring it on.
I mean, the bigger the occasion, the bigger the spectacle. But I just think we had, again, we saw it in the Wales game. The ability to defend them all is an issue, and it has been an issue. I thought we did better because we didn't throw a pod up in the women's game now with Ireland for the last number of years. It's just not something we've done well.
Well, you see, because we're small, I think we have to kill them all at source. So we now have to take out the two lifters. We have to try and sack, and you have to try and buy yourself a bit of time. The fact that we stayed down and we kind of hit Grand. But France did very well. They kind of sucked the pressure and then they just drove. The same with some of our better scrums. They just took the pressure and then drove.
Like, we're a small team. So, as I said, we're going to have to be technically really good in that scrum. Now, I was a winger, so I'm not going to try and tell any front rows how to play or the tight. But I think we need to get technically really, really good. If we're going to be a small team, we've got to move teams around the park. But we have to be smart. We've got to learn to exit better. We've got to learn to control our possession. We've got to learn not to be giving away the penalties, secure our up ball, those handling errors. Like our set piece, our scrum and our line out were under pressure.
Well, I think scrum D, we kind of were slow to react.
But is that an issue, guys, if we're looking at the fact that, I mean, Ireland are still an amateur team and France are essentially professional now? You're talking about technicalities. Technicalities in rugby, like, comes down to full-time. It comes down to elite-level coaching on a regular basis. You need that non-stop. And France, maybe, are getting that more so.
That's the problem. Before the girls go into the whole professionalism thing, what I thought, looking at the game yesterday, I thought Ireland look undercooked in a coaching sense. I think you need more time coached. Nearly full, like, can the girls get in more? You're saying, do we need a day and a half analysis?
Yeah,
the
game?
That's up to the RFU. Like, so it's unfair for us to be criticising them so much.
Yeah, because I thought they looked scattered defensively and they were opened up way too easy by the French on a lot of occasions. They were getting all sucked into the ball and they were just, French were just finding gaps way too easy, which just seems to be a coaching problem rather than a player problem.
But I suppose the issue is, I think Ireland have leeway this year because we are a year ahead of every other team in terms of trying to develop our team because we're not going to the World Cup.
Yes.
And, like, you know, I always am mindful there's been so much negativity around women's rugby the last number of years. It's just negative story after negative story. So we want to get behind and encourage this team and, like, help them get better. And, like, there's some brilliant players out there, but they've only had 3 weekends to prepare for the Six Nations.
Yeah. Against, just need more time.
A really good French team who are at a different stage of their development, who are going to a World Cup, who are contenders for a World Cup. Let's not say not that they are. They bet New Zealand twice. But we just have to get behind the team, but we also have to just look at things that didn't go well as well and just try and figure out how is the best way for this team to go forward, because we've got some really, really good players out there that we want to utilise. I'd love to see, like, our wingers coming off their wing more, because in the modern game, as any winger know, you probably don't get as many opportunities as you would have got 10 years ago. So sometimes getting in off your wing, roaming, running your ghost lines off your 9 and 10, trailing your 12, get those Bavin Parsons, Emily Murphy-Crowe, Lucy Van Hall off your wing, especially when you're down 30 points in a game, you've nothing to lose.
Yeah.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
Well, I think firstly, I think if any of the girls are listening and anyone else is listening, if you want to support the girls, they do need a lot of love right now, because I have been there, you've been there, we've been there. It's not a nice place to be. Mm. I know how hard these girls work and we need time and patience, and we are sending a lot of love to a very tough day yesterday and we're always proud of you. So that's a big message to you. The other thing is, I do think we need to start looking at retainer contracts. I'm sorry, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I've been 20 years in elite sport and I'm not going to say my opinion shouldn't be valued, because if you go into camp for a day and a half and you're right, our defence was poor, we didn't come off the scrum well enough, we look at players making decisions who's taking a French player, then we need to cut off the space. So it's little things that would have saved us some tries yesterday and cut that scoreline down. For the girls to go back to work Monday, be back in camp on Wednesday afternoon, fly to France Thursday. I don't know how mentally nor physically you're going to review from Wales and feed into number 3 in the world. It just doesn't work. It's not conducive to what we're trying to do here. And we have to be fair on them. Especially I think you're right. I think we're at the bottom of the mountain right now and we are a year ahead. However, and this is going to be the best learning. It's not going to be easy learning. It's going to be the best learning. It's going to be so transparent in what we need to do. But if we don't get test games, if we don't get more camps, if we don't actually educate the players, how are they going to learn? It doesn't matter about this year, because we're going to be no further ahead if we don't use the year and these learnings to the best of our ability to facilitate the girls to be the best.
Well, I agree with you, because I have been, ever since I retired, I've been saying that the girls need to go whatever, professional, semi-professional, because that's the way the game is going. Yeah. I played sevens for a good few years, and I can hand in my heart see how girls came into the programme and actually outperformed their ability. And I became so impressed with certain people because they were training every single day.
But we
can
see that with Stacey and Eve and Lee.
So, like,
and you know it yourself.
So you can see transformations of players that are playing, that are training full time, that are resting, that aren't working, that aren't actually, sometimes it's the psychological battle of going, oh my God, I have to leave work at 5 o'clock. Yeah. I haven't done this. I haven't done that. There's people taking my load and my job. You feel guilty. You get on a plane. You have to like, I remember leaving work at 4 o'clock one day and trying to be on the pitch in Dublin at 5:30 for a session. And I just ran out of school. And you're like, what have I left in school? Who's picking up the pieces for me? And then you have to be totally on the pitch, like, you know, in a professional attitude and get everything right that you're doing. And that is very mentally taxing. And, you know, you're trying to hold two ends up together and it's really difficult. But as I said, I played sevens. I saw the way girls transformed in that elite environment. So people would say professionalism isn't the answer. Okay, there's a lot of things that we need to fix. Grassroots, more girls playing, fix the IL, all these things. But you don't just ignore the top end and improve the bottom end. You have to work both ends.
And we will. And it's a big review. But what do we do now? What should be done now between... Because we have a big must win, really, against Italy next week. It's home in Musgrave. If anyone's around Cork, get your tickets, get your bums on seats. Support the girls. But like, to come off that, they're very disheartened, I know, by them. Very little short time. They probably won't go into camp until Thursday. They're back to work tomorrow.
Do you know what I have to say? Sometimes,
you know what I mean?
Sometimes I actually think in this, less is more on their feet.
I think so.
So what I actually think maybe what has gotten wrong the last few years is getting the girls in, doing like pitch session, play when they've come from work. Be smarter about it. Get them on the pitch, but
walk through
runners. Technical stuff. More technical stuff.
Like, don't be like, I don't mean flogging, but you mean they've only got to recover and they're coming from their work. So be smart about how you do, like, walk through things, do things not at the same pace, because you actually have to try and conserve energy. I remember it once or twice back in maybe 2019, like getting off a plane, doing a really hard pitch session, and then you're playing at the weekend and you're already tired before you start the game against a professional team. So it's about being really smart, fixing those things in D, fixing those set piece things, but like doing in a smart way, like you know, as you're saying,
they probably only need, like, I think we would have, you know, they probably would have had a performance session before leaving for France.
Yeah.
Travel takes an awful lot out of you. You have different food, you have different times.
Yeah,
I think you're right. If like walkthroughs were great,
what Craig said there about your defensive position and stuff like that comes down. You can do that in walkthroughs. You can do that slowly, except through 100%. Your problems in the scrum. That could be done with an analysis session, looking ahead to the next team, some video analysis, as opposed to let's go out and run the absolute holes off them for 2 hours.
100%. Because you have to answer the whys. Why did that happen?
Yeah.
Oh, that's because we were slow here, which meant, so say, Doro didn't come off the scrum. Cronin had to bite in. Who was our centre? Stacey, Eve had to bite in, Lee had to come off her wing, and now the fullback has to come into the line a little bit quicker. It's those decisions as to why the try happened.
Yep.
And now it's, you know, you're walking through it and you're, all right, I see. So next of all, they see the same picture against Italy.
Exactly.
We make the decisions quicker. You know what I mean?
I think a lot of it though is also experience. Like the longer you're playing, like 15s, a lot of the girls are coming from 7s, the more they're there in scenarios about how to defend, you know, like how you defend, what is your defensive system, whatever defensive system they're running. You get more used to that, where a lot of these girls are still quite inexperienced in terms of doing that. So that takes a bit of time as well. As you know, the sevens game is completely different. Defensive system, completely different.
Yeah, well, that's the thing for me. It was systematic errors yesterday. Yeah. And investigations happened and there's implementations coming. Coaches, new girls, whatever, new squad. You can't be expected to just turn it on like that. Like, no. You need time to get it on the pitch. Training, going through analysis, and they need to, or if you need to, if they're going to expect you to go up against a French professional team, they need to match the build up into that game that the French will be doing.
Yeah. And I think you've hit the nail on the head here, right? The review was very key before we started our Six Nations.
Yeah.
It's even more essential now. And what's even more essential than that now is the implementation plan going forward. That is the key to the success of the national team now. And then we'll wait for review two for the grassroots.
Because I have like no doubt, Miller. We have less player numbers. We have a smaller player group, but I know the Irish girls can be competitive.
Yes.
We could be anyone in the world if we get things right and we, you know, do things the right way and be smart. We have to be smarter, more imaginative and more creative about how we do things.
Well, they were great. Yes. Stacey Flood was incredible yesterday.
Yeah. I think
Eve Higgins was good.
Eve Higgins was really good.
Lucy was good. Yeah. I don't know all of the fours by names, but some of them really impressed.
Sam Monaghan has been a revelation. I think she has been the standout player. Yeah. She's exceptional.
And Linda. She was tagged over 12 months ago.
Yeah.
Just FYI.
So really,
you didn't.
Look, lads, I think we could talk about this all day. We really could, like, but.
Did you feel the passion there?
I did. I know, I did. It's great to see it. But I think we'll take a short break from the analysis now, and we're going to move into some questions from our fans and from us for you. Nothing too serious now. Oh, they're actually fine. They're actually fine. I mean, you've had a pretty decent career, 47 times, capped for the 15s, 24 tries, 22 tries and 35 matches for the Sevens. You've 2 Six Nations medals, including a Grand Slam. So not a bad career. So based on that, who was your most influential teammate at any level?
It can't be Lindsay.
Yeah.
So...
let me introduce you to my little friend.
I suppose I took up rugby at quite a late age. I did athletics and I played Gaelic football. And when I came into the Irish setup, I was very raw, but I was very athletic, so I was able to manage. But I think of all people, probably Lynn Cantwell, because she was so knowledgeable about rugby. The girl obviously is high performance manager in South Africa women's rugby now. She's a wealth of information. She was a really smart player. She was a really good rugby brain. So she was able to help, you know, nearly coach you nearly as well and have you in the right places and instill confidence in you. Like I, when I started playing rugby, I didn't really think I was much good. And she'd be like, you can beat anyone in the world. And just kind of giving you, throw the shackles off. She'd be like, when you get the ball, do whatever you want because you will actually beat people. And I think it was giving you that license to get out there. Or even early on in my career, we had certain coaches like, get off your wing, go roaming, get that ball. And when you're starting off, it's actually learning to come off your wing and learn to pick those right opportunities and then get back to your wing if the ball comes back. It's a bit of a technique. You have to learn when you go, when you don't go, when you come back. So given the license to do that from people like Lynn Cantwell, definitely, I think she was definitely helped me in my career early on, yeah. Because she was a back. I mean, there was forwards too, but she played 13 and I was a winger. We had a very close relationship on the field in different ways. So, Lynn Cantwell.
Christoph.
Yeah. And, I can't believe you didn't pick me.
You were Jacob.
One of the things you're most known for and is a goal of any rugby player growing up is you scored a winning try against New Zealand in the 2014 World Cup. Can you describe what that was like? Amazing, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think it's funny, we went into that World Cup expecting to beat New Zealand. I know that sounds quite... But we all summer talked about beating New Zealand because we had no option. If we didn't beat New Zealand, the way the Women's World Cup was then, you had to win your 3 games to get into a semi-final. If you don't, you're out, essentially, of that competitive phase. So we talked about beating New Zealand. We knew we'd be fitter than them. So we went into that game, I suppose, with no pressure because no one expected us to beat them. And we went in confident. So... like I knew early on in the game, I had
the upper hand.
The upper hand on my winger, and I was getting a lot of meters. I was playing well, and you know, even though 1-15, they're so threatening. Even their props with their feet, they're just, you know, they're frightening. But I remember me and Niamh Briggs had a great relationship on the field. We went back to playing back in WIT years ago, so we had a, you know, like I knew once she got the ball, like something could happen. So to get over in that left-hand corner at that stage in the game was really, really special because, you know, they were the best team in the world at the time. Obviously, from 1 to 15, everyone played really well, but to score against New Zealand in a World Cup was very special. And I think a lot of people took up rugby because of that game. So
Favourite try?
It's probably not the best try I've scored. Like, I've scored better tries. They were probably more spectacular, but...
occasion.
The context, it was an important game. It was a must-win game, and it was... a time in the game we needed to score a try, so it was a highly pressurized game at a pressurized time in the game when
it's
we needed
the best
to
score. Of the world.
Yeah, so it meant more, you know.
That's cool.
So
the kicking and decision making in that game, and I remember watching it, and it was probably one of the games because I remember rushing home from work to see your semi final against England. But it was a buy in for me anyway. Yeah. You know, I did love always exposed to men's rugby, unfortunately, but that was the glimpse I got of the women, and I thought. Briggs' kicking and control of the game.
Yeah,
and
she kicked
made.
Like
she was exceptional.
Unbelievable
that day.
Kick from the sideline. You know, often men you see miss, like, so she was an exceptional kicker. Like.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Interesting one here, actually, because you mentioned it in the first question that you didn't take up rugby until your early 20s. Based on everything we've said now about trying to grow the women's game from the club game the whole way up, any advice you would give to someone, a woman to commit, who would come into the game now at that age now, if they came in their 20s as opposed to coming in the whole way up?
Like, it's not the easiest thing to do, but if you got the right attitude, like I was lucky, my now husband is a rugby player. He played for Carlow in the AL. He played underage for Leinster. So accepted that I didn't know a lot of stuff. So I went in there with an open mind. And I think because I went in there with an open mind going, I don't know a lot of this, and used him constantly. He'd come watch the matches. He'd give me feedback.
Like a sponge.
So yeah, it's harder to do, taking it off at that late age. But if you've got the right attitude and you're willing to learn, you can pretty much like decide you're going to do it. Mm. So like, this sounds might sound really cocky, but when I started going out with him back when I was 25, I was like, I'm going to play for Ireland. And he kind of looked at me like, who's your one? And I mean, I did, because I had the attitude to go do it. I knew physically I could do it. I mean, I had to go.
You have to have that attitude. Otherwise, you never would have met it.
Exactly. Yeah. Which I learned the game back to front. So I went and played the game and learned back to front, learned the skills. Yeah. But I mean, also, I played at a lower level for a while, I think, did suit me. So my first club was Portlaoise, and we played in the development league.
Yeah.
So people will often say, there is a time and a place to play at the right standard for you. So for that first year for me, that was good, because I figured out things.
And
I learned
balls.
The rules. Yeah. I learned different things. And then I went and played for Connacht, and I was thrown in the deep end. But you got to have a mentality. It was either sink or swim for me at that international level. I was either going to like play and get dropped, or play and survive, and I survived. So, I mean, I think if you're athletic out there and you think you can do it, go join your local club. I'm a big advocate. I think there should be someone in the IFU, a full-time scout that goes around to the lower divisions around Ireland, because that's where I came from. I've been involved with a lot of my friends play for Twello Women, so they'd often ask me to do a session. And by God, the talent down there. Mm. A lot of unpolished diamonds in the rough that could just be fantastic rugby players, but they come from Gaelic football or soccer and they play it in their off season. But there's probably talent all around Ireland in those small clubs that we could harness and get them in and, you know, see where they go. Obviously, you want girls playing.
How would you do it?
You could do it like the IQ thing we have with the men's team, where they go off and they look for players that are eligible in other countries. And we've got a lot of players that have come in.
I mean,
that,
what kind of infuriates me, we do it in England, why don't we do it here?
Yeah.
I mean, you might get no one. Yeah. You might get one.
There's regional development officers that go around to all the clubs around the country in a couple of weeks. Like, so that's how they pick them up. Maybe just need more than
one. I just think you should have a dedicated women's one doing a full-time role, because it goes around. Because we don't have a huge player number.
We need to grow it.
Yeah, we need to grow up, because I came from the lowest division rugby that you can play. And I mean, no one will be going to watch those games, because who are you expecting to find in development rugby? No one. Mm. But I mean, that's where I came from. So I could have, I mean, I went to Leinster Trials then. So the interesting part is I went to Leinster Trials after the year of my first my first season with Portlaoise Development League. So I went to Leinster Trials, didn't get picked, didn't even get a call back. I knew I was good enough deep down. So I took the long road.
They are kicking themselves.
Yeah, I took the long road to Connacht.
Yeah.
And I played one match for Connacht and I got selected by the Irish coach to go into camp. And that's that. And I started the first game of Six Nations and played them all that year in 2010. So, I mean, someone like me could have been easily missed. I could have said, okay, I'm obviously not good enough to play for Leinster.
Yeah.
But I suppose that ignorance or whatever it was, to know that I had something there that I could do it. And so how many other girls maybe have been missed over the years like that have...
It's fair.
You know, they might not be ready yet. Doesn't mean they're not ready in a year or two. That's often the case.
I think that's another thing we need to probably fill in the gap.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's AIL, maybe like monthly development sessions for these unpolished diamonds, as you say. But yeah, I'm going to go on to my question, actually, because you mentioned the UK. We've obviously a lot of Irish players plying their trade in the Premiership over there. Was that ever anything that was, you know, for you to consider or on your radar?
Funny, because when I played with the Barbarians in 2019, and a lot of the English girls were like, Alison, how come you never came over to play in England? And I don't know. I think it was because I was involved with the Irish Sevens team. Even before the Irish Sevens women's went professional, we've been playing Irish women's Sevens since 2012. So even though it wasn't professional, we did weekend camps for a long time. So I think being involved in that, I suppose you couldn't be off in England. It would have made life harder. Maybe I'm a bit of a home bird. But for me, I did other things to make my game better that didn't involve, like, I trained with, I did a lot of skill sessions with Joy Carberry's father, Joy Senior, their son and their daughter. And I did sessions. I did contact sessions with my husband. I did sessions with UCC men, skill sessions. I did speed sessions with Phil Healy's coach. I just wanted to be the best I could be, and okay, so yes, there wasn't skill sessions maybe organized for me, or there wasn't speed sessions organized for me. I went and found ways to be better, whatever way I could. Like, you know, so I had friends that played, like I had male friends that played high level rugby. I used those. I used my husband. I did whatever I could to be better.
Isn't it funny how that echoes a lot of, like, you would hear that from a lot of stories of high achieving athletes. They just did things outside the box.
Yeah.
They didn't just match their opponent. They did over and beyond.
Because I used to wake up and go, okay, what would an English women's rugby player be doing now? So I, you know, found ways to do things that weren't necessarily, no one was telling me or asking me, I wasn't getting money for them, but I found different ways to do it, like, where I could, you know? And I remember, like, training with the UCC men's team and, like, you gotta be, they're so much quicker than you. So we were doing, like, footwork, we were doing evasion things, and you gotta be so much more, like, especially in D or in attack, you gotta be more inventive savvy, in attack, savvy or faster. So I think that definitely stood to me, and I used my husband for 10 years. And, like, he was probably, he should be coaching women's rugby. He knows women's game inside out now from, I suppose, being involved.
He's a gentleman. Alan Galley.
You're out there, though. But yeah, used him. So that's how.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Very motivational story, that is. You just made it happen, like, no excuses. So it says a lot to even other sports people listen to this right now. Just get it done. If you want it bad enough, you make it happen. So,
yeah, it's funny. I know you did athletics, but I ran for St. Albans Athletic Club in Laois, and it's a real country club. And it was a real club where just get on with it. Whatever way you have to get good. It was like, don't wear your fancy gear up here on a rainy night. You know, wear your old clothes. And I think that's deep down in me. We just found a way to compete. And there's been a lot of successful athletes in that club. So they definitely taught me something from that.
Yeah.
It's a good mentality to have.
Exactly. Well, as someone who played both 7s and 15s, I was interested to know how you found transitioning back and forth between the two disciplines. Because at the top level, they're essentially different sports. Yeah. Like, and how did you find that?
Well, I definitely think there is a certain type of player that can play both. And I think there's certain 15s backs or back rows that will not suit 7s. And there's certain 7s players who won't suit 15s. But there's a certain hybrid that does suit it.
Yeah.
Are you talking about me? Karen Paquin
for Canada.
Yeah, she's
the 7 for Canada. But she, I believe, a 7s player. Like, you know, she was a good
very
example.
Sound girl.
Yeah. I don't know her actually, but she's an incredible player. But yeah, so for me, what I did find difficult was when I played 7s, I was definitely leaner. And so when I went back into 15s, at times I probably felt I was a bit lean, too lean for the game of 15s. I think sometimes, you know, you're going on the 7 circuit, you have all this space and, you know, you're able to evade people, and, you know, like, it's hard to defend in 7s, you know, like, it's, I mean, 7 people on the field, missed tackles happen all the time, and it's not that people are bad defenders, it's just you've got so much space, like, that's going to happen. So I think when you come back into 15s, you think you're going to be, oh, I'm in flying form. I am, absolutely. I'm going to come in here, and then you come up against the reality of that hard line, the reality of that lack of space. So I think it was challenging. For me, I started playing 15s before I played 7s. So I had my positioning nailed. Now, defensive systems change over the years, and you'll have different types of ways that, you know, what way you'll play, and the back three will play, how you'll play. And I've played different systems, but I knew them. So I was able to slot back in, and I was always a physical 7s player as well. So I probably suited both games. But yeah, it was difficult.
I don't miss being tackled by you, by the way. Holy Lord.
Which one did you prefer, 7s or 15s?
I probably preferred 15s in the fact I love 7s, and I loved the fitness element of it, having to be fit. I was, like, I loved athletics, so I loved the challenging of how fit you had to be. If 7s could have, I don't know how this could be happened, but if 7s could have been longer, I know that's, like, you can't imagine it being longer.
The match.
Yeah.
Are you nuts?
No, I know, but to me, it just felt like sometimes.
She is actually.
They used to have, the finals used to be 10 minutes half, and they got rid of that because it was too much.
I know, but I think at times it just felt like the game was over before you knew it, and a bit of luck could come in and a team would win. And I often think in 7s, sometimes
bounce of a ball changes
the game. But I prefer the lead up to the 15s, like that, the lead up to the week, the big game, the supporters. I think people don't follow a 7s team around the world the same way they follow a 15s. So you think you miss that. But I did love, like, for me, the Sevens was about Olympics and you got to go to go to the Olympics. For me...
The Olympic hero himself.
Yeah.
In
like,
studio.
You're so lucky. Like, no one can take that away from you. You're... Have you got your tattoo?
I do. It's on my calf. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But I think...
You can have a picture with it on the show.
For me, I always wanted to go to the Olympics as an athlete. And that's why I played Sevens. It's about the Olympics for me.
Well, so, retirement, though. Paris
2020. The oldest Sevens player going. But I think... For me, the Sevens is about the Olympics. And if we qualified for Rio in 2016, which I think we could have,
yeah,
I would have been so happy to leave Sevens and play 15s, you know, but
yeah,
I'm jealous of you.
No, you've done some amazing... Scoring against New Zealand in a World Cup now is pretty cool. So don't be saying that. Yeah.
Well, look, that was great. Hope you enjoyed that. That's not too hard. It's handy old questions. We're not... Lindsay didn't go too hard.
No, she didn't.
Surprisingly, not surprisingly.
Yeah. But I wanted to, but I felt I gave you to enough monster.
We'll get back to the URC. We're going to whiz through the rest of it now, obviously, because we spent so much time with the passion me and Greg had for Munster and the passion you two had for the women's game.
Yeah.
But we still have to talk about poor old Ulster. Disappointing defeat for them, 34-16. That's two losses now in South Africa. South African teams are proven, like, every week they are tough to beat at home, but... Big talking point in that game was a yellow card for Kieran Treadwell in the 65th minute.
I thought it was harsh. Like, the consistency of the mitigating factors with these high tackles is, you know, bent legs of the player making the tackle. Mm. And, like, he's a big man. His legs were bent. He looked in good position. He did hit the ball. And to me, the knock-on of that, the impact of that just kind of drove him up.
He showed him in contact with the ball.
Exactly. You don't see his legs driving the force up. So I thought, to be honest, like, that's two games now. It's been marred with controversy for poor Ulster. Mm. Like, the referee, head referee's committee last week, or... have apologised for last week's non-try, which would have won them the game, but I still don't think they should have started as they had, but what consolation.
Like, add 5 points onto their score, so maybe that changes it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what's coming out giving an apology for? Like,
I think there was two big moments in that game that really didn't help, I suppose. The pass to Lowry, that, do you remember that in the Ulster game, and then the winger scored...
Nathan Doak gave it.
So Lowry was under huge pressure, and then the winger scored, and then obviously the intercept try at the end. There were two huge moments in the game.
See, that's the thing for me. Look, it's a top place to go. I think the South African teams are playing extremely well at the moment. They're obviously chasing for playoff places, but the thing is, I think if I'm probably honest, and hopefully Stephen Ferguson is not still angry yesterday looking at this, but I think they still had... I still think they had the win in both games if they errors, and discipline.
The yellow card was massive. Bull scored a rolling maul try when Tread was off. That's a big moment. I thought Nathan Doak was good yesterday. Again,
he's excellent, and then he went from 9 to 10, so it shows his adaptability when Cooney came on at 9.
His kicking was incredible. Him over from the halfway line. I know he's in South Africa where the air is a little bit thinner down there, isn't it? But still, like, hitting those, I can see him getting into an Irish shirt for New Zealand this summer.
To see him, same with Jamie O'Brien, getting those chances to go down.
100%. You have to start rewarding these guys for how well they're playing.
Yeah, because otherwise they lose confidence, and, you know, you don't want them moving. You want them staying with Irish provinces, getting into an Irish jersey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think the big question to take out of that game, guys, so obviously they've lost in South Africa back to back, but did a big win against Leinster before that. Had a very good season.
Absolutely.
Next up is the small matter of Toulouse.
Little Dupont.
In the Champions Cup. I mean, we all know how good Toulouse are. They're absolutely ridiculous, like, right? But we know Ulster at the top, when they're playing their best, are a very good side. Do they have hope? Can they overturn them?
I think they will have hope, right? But I think if they take the two games down at South Africa, they're in discipline, the poor decisions, they will not get away with that. They will be punished against Toulouse. So if they can continue to play the expansive, electrifying rugby that they've been playing over this season, had some big scalps, they had a bit of blip over the last 2 weeks, take the blips, take the learning, use them going in, just fine-tune your game for playoff rugby now. I think it could be an upset. I think it's a long shot, but I think if they can make those improvements going forward, because there will be no margin for error against Dupont.
What do you think, Greg? Dupont and Entomac?
I don't think Ulster have a chance in Toulouse. Maybe back in, is it Kingspan or Ravenhill? What did they call
Kingspan,
it?
Kingspan.
I think they might do all right if they have a full team available, as you said, because they beat Leinster a couple of weeks ago. Leinster incredible. Toulouse lost the cast at the weekend.
Yeah.
So they're vulnerable, but I just don't think you're going to beat them in Toulouse.
What do you think?
Just embrace the underdog, go out there.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
I mean, oh, he's got to lose.
Pun intended.
Now, moving on, and following two heavy defeats, Connacht scraped a win away to Benetton. What do we think?
Yeah, Benetton are playing well. I just think it's mad to be that close. Like, the, what, they win by 4 points, 21-17. Benetton did well. Like, Connacht were lucky to win that game.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. Like, they started off so well. What, 30 seconds of the clock, Keane Prendergast goes through a little gap right on the gain line. They're the passes we like.
He didn't need his support either.
He didn't. I tell you, he's playing well. He's another man I think deserves an opportunity down in New Zealand. I think he's having a great season. I know he's been brought into camp as a development player, but he had a lot of work to do to finish that, and he showed good pace and good legs. He did get yellow carded, so he kind of had a bittersweet and... kind of summed up the last couple of weeks, really, hasn't it, for Connacht? You know, do some really good things and then do things that really get punished for them. But look, Benetton had their internationals back.
See, it's not to take away from Benetton. Benetton have a lot of internationals. They're coming off the back of their first Six Nations win in, what, 7 years against Wales. They're flying high. Connacht had, I know Connacht had Mac Hansen and Finney Beelan back, no Bundiaki, but you still, you're going over to Italy. You've got, I mean, even the Italian captain was playing, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's still a win, like, and you know what I mean?
They're back in contention.
That's it.
So.
Back in the saddle.
Benetton,
you know?
Probably have to start thinking of them as not an easy win over there.
That's the thing, yeah.
They've probably improving over the last few years, and we're probably still judging them on being Italian when they've probably actually improved without us realising, you know.
Well, we did McKinley last week, and he kind of said the same to us that Benetton are really putting in, even though they've no academy, you know, they're doing well and they're attracting players. So confidence breeds, you know.
We said it on the show a few times at this stage. Benetton have won a trophy more recently than Ulster, Munster and Connacht.
Yeah.
Winning the Wainwright Cup, like, so I mean, do you know what I mean?
They might surprise us over the next few years. We won't see them coming.
exactly. But do we think Connacht can overturn Leinster over two legs? Like, I mean, we know they can grind them down and perhaps get a win in the sports ground, but can they keep them out then and get an aggregate win once they get into Dublin?
Not
where
you've got
full strength. Yeah.
Full strength Leinster. You're in the Aviva. It's a dry day. We've seen glimpses of when they went into fifth gear, you know, last night against Munster, and they have so many options to score. And their conversion rate in the green zone to convert.
Connacht actually have a game plan though, that's the difference, you see, so might actually help them, you know.
No, Connacht generally seem
to have a game plan, and your friend actually is doing good things at Connacht.
I think they'll frustrate
them. There is a chance there for them. Yeah.
I think they'll frustrate them. I think they won't make it easy. But do I think Leinster overall will have a problem with them? No. No offence.
Sorry,
no,
I think
Connacht, I could be eating these words.
Connacht definitely need Bundiaki back in the centre.
Yeah.
If they're going to have any chance in the sports ground, they're probably going to need it to be a wet day. They might get a win there, but I can't see them winning in Dublin either.
But then the style of Connacht play, sometimes you wonder, different pitch. Like, that sports ground is I don't like playing on it. Never like playing on its heavy pitch. The style they play is quite expansive. So sometimes you think on a different pitch, like, how would they play? Like, I know you're saying wet, like, traditionally come up to Connacht to play in absolute terrible weather, bring teams over, but
they're not that team anymore.
No, they're a different team. Yeah. They play a different style. So sometimes I actually think,
I'm saying it more so to nullify Leinster's attack.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying as well, but I often think, you know, if a different pitch and Connacht, could they, you know, with their style of play suit, you know, nicer ground?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not
to take away. I think Connacht have shown glimpses of being
just consistency
brilliant
with Connacht, I think.
Yeah, but I think they need everything to go right. I think they need a full team. I think they need a performance. I think they need the refereeing to go right and Leinster to have an off day. Yeah, I think that's just the story, though.
They have Jack Harty and Caelan Blade playing well at their halfbacks. So Conor Oliver is going to play well regardless. Keane Prendergast at six.
Yeah.
Bundy in the centre.
Yeah, Mac Hansen. Absolutely fine.
That's a nice spine of a team there.
It is. No, they've great players. Yeah. I think it's just,
they have to,
because of their depth, and then they've been inconsistent at times, let's be honest. You know, they go through periods of being consistent, and then they've obviously had
in the foot. They could be, you know, leading the game, and then
margins for them. They haven't got as deep a squad and maybe the experience and all that. So I think, yes, they're a formidable opposition, and they can bring threats, but I think they need everything to go right over two legs.
Hopefully it does go well. It'll be a good game.
Oh, here that's we
it.
Go.
So summarise, we reckon Munster are probably going to lose to Exeter. We reckon Ulster have a slight chance of beating Toulouse, and more than likely it'll be Leinster defeating Connacht.
I think Munster will do all right in Tone Park against Exeter.
What about Sandy Park? We'll leave it there. And so we'll round up the rest of the URC games out over the weekend. Unfortunately for Italian rugby, I know Benetton are doing well, but another heavy defeat for Zebra. They lost 40-12 to Glasgow Warriors. The Sharks, another win for the South African sides at home. They demolished the Dragons 51-3. Edinburgh, I don't think they got a win last week in South Africa. The only team to get a win.
Yeah.
Out of all of them, but unfortunately, they couldn't make it to last 15-0 to the Lions. The Stormers beat the Ospreys 29-13, and Scarlets defeated Cardiff 35-20. So another cracking week of URC action.
Absolutely.
14 out of the 15 home games in recent weeks that the South African teams have won. They scored 72 tries to the opposition is 25.
They're exciting to watch, aren't they? They are exciting.
That's some
to watch.
Stat. 14 out of 15 wins for South African teams at home.
So
when they were whipped, yeah.
It's amazing.
They're in contention so for move for the knockout stage.
I think Bulls are only 5 points behind fourth place.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Stormers up there as well, yeah.
The good to see a South African team in the playoffs, even though that might mess up Munster's chances. Munster and a South African team and then Ulster and Leinster, right? I'm okay with that.
You're all right with that. Are you happy with that? Yeah. Everyone listening out there?
To finish up, guys, we have got some rugby news. Funny one to start off with. Paul Rodge got a slap on the sidelines in the top 14 the weekend. Bordeaux Beglers coach Christophe Urios, who interesting, they're playing in the European Cup, but
yes.
I don't know if you notice, if you've seen before in the top 14, it's like the same way as in soccer, so the coaches are actually down in their little technical area and things got a little heated, like, and the two of them were, I think he was shouting at him in French anyway, I don't know, it was Cork French anyway, but
well, keeping it large anyway.
It wasn't quite a Will Smith slap, but he did give him a little bit of a
such a little French slap to the face, like, wasn't it? Yeah, I say, well, Rodgers was boiling his blood that you could see him screaming, something happened on the pitch and he was just screaming in his face. But
I'd love to know what was said between the two of them anyway, like, and like what's going to happen now, like the fact that they're playing each other twice now back to back in the European Cup.
I wonder, will the next slap be a little bit harder?
I don't know, it's something I'd like to see, though, obviously not to slap in purple. I would like to see like more rugby coaches using that technical area like they do in France, because
I
love it in soccer. Like, you look at it in soccer, the likes of Klopp and him, like, it's probably the best thing about Liverpool matches is watching Klopp go crazy in the sidelines.
Absolutely, the passion come through and their personality, and we don't get to see that probably enough. Yeah, it's always camera up to the box behind glass and
they're hitting their laptops all professional and very old fashioned, but come on, get down there, throw some slaps, let's get it going.
We don't condone slapping in the show.
No slapping, sorry. Another big bit of news there was the Munster branch withdrawing the motion to recognise women's AIL clubs and players as senior. Now, I know you've got a bit of info on that and you were chatting to people about it, so you might be able to give us a bit more.
Yeah, so to change a bylaw when it goes to vote, so they wanted to change a bylaw recognising, which is in line with the other three provinces, so recognising clubs that have women's AIL teams. So anyone who's, it's normally men's teams that have AIL 1 and 2, they're regarded as senior clubs. But if your women's team is AIL but your men's team isn't, you're not regarded as a senior club, which has a huge impact on your ticket allocation, which means money, which means more sponsorship, which means you can invest in your rugby and develop your club. So this wasn't going to pass. You have to have 2/3 majority for a bylaw change, and it got pulled at the 11th hour. Now, considering that bylaw in Ulster, Leinster and Connacht, that's a huge backward step for Munster rugby.
Massive.
And I think it was a huge impact on Ballincollig, who have come up to the AIL, and to keep up with the rest of the teams. Like, we've seen the AIL split this year after Christmas into the top four nearly, and then kind of a bottom six. Like, clubs like Ballincollig need investment, you know, they need investment to develop their players and to keep up with the rest of the league. And I just think it's sad, considering we just don't need to be in the news for the wrong reasons now. And I think the biggest area of growth is women's participation, and we need to recognise that. So,
and can I ask, is there anything that can be done? I'm really bad at the ins and outs of all these committees and this and that, but is there anything that can be done now by the RFU?
It comes back. Great question, Ali, because like, I'm probably only learning this. We never would recognise that as players, because, you know, there's people looking after us and making these decisions. But, you know, there's representative committees that don't have, it doesn't necessarily have to be a female, but we have to have the right, whether it's female or male, the right people in the right, right committees making the decisions for the betterment of the players, the clubs, the leagues, the women's game. So there is a huge impact in all areas when these votes are made, you know. So we do need changes. I know it's slow to come. I know it's easy for me to say, but you know, we have seen now where we're at chatting about the women's game.
we need to start making changes up along. We need right players, right people in the right decisions, you know. Yeah.
And I think an interesting thing is, I think women's clubs, like I've seen certain women take up rugby where the men or the boys in that house were traditionally GAA or soccer, would never have considered rugby. But then their younger brothers saw their sisters playing and got into rugby and became really, really good rugby players.
Yeah.
So it actually has a knock-on benefit for men's rugby.
Tunnel, and you've Alex O'Brien. Alex never probably gets a mention under the shadow of our brother Sean. We haven't mentioned your late father Bobby Miller, who's a great GAA man and would be so proud, you know, watching you go down a pitch. So yeah, just the dynamic.
Is this just the clubs in general? So it's like, this would be the club, as in it wouldn't be say if it's UL Bowes women in Munster, would it be specifically UL Bowes women who are getting the vote here, or is it the club itself?
The club itself.
If it's the club itself, and that's something, I won't get in too much detail because I could do another full show on it. Yeah. Greg will tell you the exact same thing. Like, and you just said there, in Leinster, Ulster and Connacht has been passed for a long time, and it's worked its way up to the provincial setup as well. Yeah. There's a massive problem in Munster with an old-fashioned mentality of the way they run clubs in Munster, and the way things work, and the way everyone kind of the alakadoos, the old fogies as we call them. Huge problems in Munster for a very long time, and that's probably what it comes back to. Backwards thinking, people in positions, people. I'm on a committee myself with a junior club at a club that we started a few years ago, and I've dealt with the Munster branch so many times, setting up the club and like just everything that to do with financial, to do with just dealing with the whole setup as a whole.
Yeah,
and it's backwards, it's old fashioned, and it's a huge problem in the club game in Munster.
And you lose the genuine people then, don't you?
Yeah.
Like you're knocking your head against the wall, like you're trying to set up.
We can't get referees in Munster at the moment because no one wants to referee. Like there's guys coming out, like there's Johnny Lacey is a former international test referee who's refereed New Zealand, Australia, he's refereed World Cups. He was out refereeing under 18s games there and under 13s there recently. George Clancy as well, all these guys out refereeing because no one wants to referee in Munster at the moment. So there has to be a problem there, like, and it's reflected on the professional game as well, like, because there's a disconnect there with the clubs and the province as well, and it's a mess down there, like, and as you said with the women's game, if you don't start down the bottom, and if there's problems down the bottom, things ain't going to go well up top.
No, nope.
Because there's going to be a breakdown somewhere there in the middle.
I think I'd like people to think differently about it. As like, as I said, I have seen men and boys that never considered rugby.
Oh, it's not a gender thing.
But their sisters played in clubs.
Yeah.
And then they joined that club. And then some of them became professional. But they would have not considered rugby until their sisters had. So you're opening up rugby to completely different...
100%.
New
areas and new families.
So like, so you mightn't like having your women play in your club, but you could end up getting loads of male players that were never looked at rugby before having a women's team. Interesting point.
Yeah.
I've met so many supportive older men in committees that are absolutely fantastic.
Shout out to the people who do work.
There's some absolutely brilliant people, but there is a lot of people in there that are still in that
they just need to change their mindset.
Just need to change and get with the times. And like, rugby needs to evolve and rugby needs to grow as a sport around the world and everywhere. And like, for something like this, like to happen, is just crazy. Like, considering how far we've tried to come in the last couple of years with the women's game. But final bit of more news. We have to end on another poor dampener with Spain. We have to bring it up because this is the second time they've done it. Like, the last time around, Russia ended up being in our group in the World Cup. Like, so they're supposed to be in our group for this for the World Cup next year. But they're after getting caught now with another player eligible. What do you make of that, Greg?
Is it the same rule they're after breaking again?
Same rule. Basically, they had a player that wasn't eligible. Like, so obviously they brought in from a different country.
What are the managers doing? Like, you're having siestas. Like, look at the eligibility of each player.
I think
there's
a language barrier.
Honestly, like, that's someone in the boardroom's job now to make sure that's... Like, that's not a player issue. Like, and think of how heartbroken those players are.
I'm saying all the work they did. Like, and as we mentioned, they're on the front page of the Spanish newspaper for the first time in like 10 years.
Imagine being in both World Cup campaigns as well, getting taken away from.
Can I ask a question then? What if a player gets caught for performance enhancing drugs?
Think that's the same because it's eligibility comes down to players. We don't the players on us, and then obviously the coaches wouldn't be aware. It's an admin error where they should know you ain't eligible.
It's the federation,
You know,
it's just disappointing.
It's
for them, isn't
it's just
it?
Disappointing for them. But lads, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week. Alison, did you enjoy our company?
I did. Yeah, great to be with you guys.
Ali Miller. Actually, Ali used to do this with her jersey presentation. Do it there, Ali. Ali would go up, get her jersey presentation, and then we'd all go, woo. And
I'd have to do my gymnastics pose, Flinty gymnastics. Yeah. Where that came from, someone made me do it once and then 47 times later it had to happen.
I think that's the time we beat France and then we had to keep you doing it as a look.
I know, I've been doing it since 2010.
we won't make you do it to wrap up today's show anyway.
I think we should.
No, it's been great having you on, Ali. You've been great.
Yeah. No problem.
A pleasure, my friend.
Of course.
My friend, you're I was only joking, you're always my friend.
And of course, we have to give a massive thank you to our partners, Bank of Ireland, proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. Until next time, guys, thanks very much.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.